On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. This program is live. It's the sixth day of January 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to get the Listen Live pop-out player. Of course, if you're on some sort of iMobile smart thingamajig device, we recommend the apps from Stitcher and TuneIn and WhoTunes. And we have an ambition of someday having our own little app, but we don't have $3,000 laying around at the moment. So, until then. Anyway, you also go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com if you want to jump in to one of the liveliest chat room discussions going out there in the broadcast world. Folks filing in even now as we speak for this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Sentient Being and Texas T. And good evening to our two inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. And I imagine the room will get even more populated as time goes by. Yeah, it's cold and getting colder. Getting brutaler and brutaler. Not that I'm expecting or deserving of any sympathy from people in places like, say, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Vermont, Michigan, where it's already gotten. But yeah, it's going to be ugly cold. And we'll figure out a way to, bundle up, right? So it is. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, lest I forget, because I do forget. The interface for PayPal, because that's how we keep this all on the air. Thank you very much to everyone who jumped in to make last night a successful evening. And thank you very kindly to James, who got us started this evening so that we have only $135 to raise this evening, which is awesome. And anybody wanting to jump in with James and stand shoulder to shoulder, groovy. Wow, did I just say groovy? Yeah, I did. I'm old. But you're welcome to stand shoulder to shoulder, side by side, arm in arm. Do whatever you with James and help us keep a little bit out front of the game because, it ain't a game. It's existential, really. We got a good start on January thanks to Reinhard and thanks to Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge and the folks who responded to it. And, it'd be nice to stay that way. So, yeah, $135 to go this evening. Now, and by the way, just because I don't mention it that often, but I should, a gentle reminder, you can always get the podcast just directly through the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website. Okie doke, okie doke. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and a reminder of where the concept of Titanic Tuesday comes from. Titanic Tuesday is, of course, a celebration of the right-wing intellect, whether it be birthers, deathers, denthers, booger-eaters, birchers, libertarians, or run-of-the-mill right-wing repiglickens. They're all here. It is named from a story our buddy Jim told us years ago about a 962nd-tier right-wing talker over in Beckley who was notorious for reading the newspaper to his listeners. There were wrecks out on the interstate when that happened. People would just fall asleep, and there you go. One morning, one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking listeners called in, Steve, why you reckon it is that there is clamshells in rocks in West Virginia? To which he replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic toothpick holder. But anyway, we celebrate right-wing idiocy on Titanic Tuesday, and you know, by Jove, I think we've got a dandy to start with. Now we all know who Steve Cantaloupe's King is, right? We swore in today. I suggest they probably should have been sworn at, but regardless, a new Congress was sworn in today. I imagine given the 114th. The 114th attempt at a Congress that this nation has mustered since the ratification of the Constitution, and it would appear that we are still on the downhill part of that bell curve, and it may just be all down. There's no upswing. We pass the top of the pendulum, and you know, it's just an endless downhill roller coaster with people vomiting and screaming and it, right. Put your hands in the air, Yzma. No. So Steve King was sworn in among all the other chimpanzees flinging poo through the grating, and he's Steve Cantaloupe's King, of course, because the folks in Iowa who sent him there, and why, Jesus, why? But they did, and he's all upset about the Mexicans. President Obama met today with the president of Mexico to talk U.S.-Mexican relations. And, of course, the 114th Congress, dominated as it is by people with, faith the size of cabbage heads, but brains the size of mustard seeds. Well, they're gonna go after the Kenyan Muslim usurper whose tyrannical boot is upon our necks. And Steve King is upset about the Mexicans. He's all worried of him. And remember, we call him Steve Cantaloupe King because he says that America is being invaded by people by 16-year-old Mexicans with calves the size of cantaloupes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we can celebrate Steve King this evening on this Titanic Tuesday because there's nothing quite as satisfying on a Titanic Tuesday, at least to me and perhaps to you, as when a right-winger attempts to explain history. That's right, Carol, News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out, you know, Steve King has so much to worry about, what with Iowa being a border state and all. Well, yeah, there's that. Do they grow cantaloupes? I mean, maybe in your backyard garden or something. But I mean, is there big cantaloupe production in Iowa? I don't see it. Regardless, it is a delight when a right winger tries to delve into history and explain it to those of us who don't understand it. And for me, and I've made a point of trying to study a little bit of it. I certainly am no authority. But I'm fascinated with the period of United States history after the ratification of the Constitution and up through about the end of the Madison presidency. Because that's when you see everything unraveling. Even the framers of the Constitution and the founders of the nation and the revolutionaries, by the time Madison is done being president, they've come to realize that a lot of their high-minded ideals were for naught. And some of them participated in the for naught part of it. There was old Thomas Jefferson, who was all against a strong federal government, and he was a Republican, which would become the Democrats, and he believed in the power of the individual several states until he became president and bought a continent without any constitutional authority to do it. You're right. Irish Dave writes, but the question remains, whither the Titanic finger bowls? Oh, we worried about the Titanic finger bowls ages ago. We've been through Titanic shrimp forks and Titanic salad forks and Titanic butter knives and gravy boats and tureens. And, yeah. No word. No word on any of it. All we know is that the Titanic plates were moving. But anyway. So they've got one of these right-wing sites has a program called Radio America. Wait a minute. Radio America. And I'll leave you to imagine your very own fife and drum corps. This was yesterday, and of course John Boehner has since been. Well, I was reelected speaker. Swanimus. Anybody got a cigarette? Where's my Merlot? What do you mean we've only got rosé? John Boehner has been reelected speaker. He has held off a challenge from Yoho and Gohmert. There's a pirate ship parody in there somewhere. But he went on this Radio America program to explain why he was going to vote against John Boehner. But it turns out he was voting against John Boehner, not because of John Boehner, but, well, you know, when you're a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, you probably don't have a real good handle on good old-fashioned Merkin history. Because they don't teach upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Merkin history over there in Kenyan Muslim usurper school. Mm-mm. So it fell to Steve Cantaloupe's King to explain that period of American history that I just mentioned a few minutes ago, a period of time in which America's leading military mind, its leading general, yep, really, was actually a traitorous spy in the pay of the Spanish crown. Yeah. And a time when Americans were moving westward across what was then the frontiers of Kentucky and Tennessee, inching ever slowly across Virginia and Pennsylvania into Ohio and on toward Indianistan, Talibandiana. Moving, in other words, nearer and nearer the Mississippi border, which was the then frontier of the United States of Merca. Because everything beyond that was either Spain or France, depending on which one was holding title at the moment. And in and about there, you run into a cat by the name of Aaron Burr, who is probably one of the most vilified and at the same time most fascinating of America's, of the United States' early leaders. He helped to throw the election of 1802. Was it 1802? Or was it 1800? 1800? Ah, you tell me. Into the House of Representatives, thereby testing the structure that the framers of the Constitution had put up, and then would not bow out gracefully, even though he was the number three guy. And he got caught up in some politics whereby the Federalists, who hated Jefferson, decided that maybe they'd rather have Burr of New York. And it just got nasty, and Jefferson never forgave Burr for not removing his name from consideration. Yeah. They go on, and they have their falling out, and Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton didn't get along even a little bit. And that's where we pick up Steve Cantaloupe's King with a history lesson a Titanic history lesson for the ages.
You cannot have a president that assigns himself as the legislative power, and he's done that over and over again. Our founding fathers envisioned that the Congress would stand up and defend their constitutional authority under Article 1. And they believed also that the people would stand up and push their members of Congress to defend that Article 1. And they never imagined that a president would get...
Wait, time out. There's not a lot of contentiousness in that initial statement. But I think, if I recall correctly, and I believe I do... Steve King is talking here about the legislative prerogatives of the legislative branch. The legislature legislates, the executive executes, and the courts adjudicate. Now, if you've been listening to Dr. Bill O'Brien for the last couple of days, that in point of fact, he's been discussing the role of the judiciary as envisioned in the Federalist Papers. I recommend these discussions to you in terms which, well, I'm hard pressed to make urgent enough, because in the 114th Congress we're going to hear a lot of blathering about, you know, Kenyon, you slurping. And only if you understand the actual intended structure of the United States government can you make a decision as to whether or not any you slurping is going on, Kenyon, Muslim, or otherwise. And hence I recommend to you Dr. Bill's program. His archives are available at White Rose Society, just like the archives to this program. You can, I believe, even sign up for an RSS feed. And if you do that, you will wind up being one of the most most educated people among your peer group as regards the founding of the United States of America. Because that's Dr. Bill's wheelhouse. I mean, every pitch that comes over looks like a grapefruit, and he just puts it in the cheap seats every day. He's that intelligent, and he's so, so able to explain what this stuff means. Read along with Dr. Bill, and you will be an informed citizen. But anyway, Steve King is blathering on about how the Kenyan Muslim usurper is usurping the legislative Article 1 prerogatives of the Congress. The only problem being that, well, he's not the first usurper, if that's the case. Because I seem to remember when Steve King could not run fast enough to go and vote for an authorization to let dim leader George W. Bush go and have himself an undeclared war in Iraq and Afghanistan, particularly Iraq. I mean, he was in a... And that was nothing if not an abdication of Congress's... Because the Constitution spells out pretty clearly who it is that starts wars. And the Constitution spells out pretty clearly that wars are to be started under the imprimatur of the Congress of the United States. Congress declares them, the President executes them. See? Legislative, executive. That's how it works. But, no, there was no declaration of war against Iraq. There was no declaration of war against Afghanistan, because people like Steve Cantaloupe's King were not interested in maintaining the prerogatives of the Congress as long as the President was white and Republican like them. Get it? Sure. So let's continue. Just understanding that within the first few seconds of this clip, Steve Cantaloupe's King has already proven himself to be a giant wampin' hypocrite. But we're surprised why.
Give his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, take care that the laws be faithfully executed, so help him God. Give that oath. And then give us lectures about him not having the authority to legislate, and then turn around and assume that authority unto himself as if his word means nothing.
Because, you know, he's uppity and shiftless, and now he's a liar. Because he's that one in Steve King's White House. Never mind the fact that all this lawless tyranny usurping going on is merely a matter of executing. No, Carol Baker, he's not talking about WC. Carol, even News Ninja Carol Baker was confused. Because it sounds like it. Right. No. Executive orders are used to control the behavior of branch of departments within the executive branch, which is what all of the executive orders have dealt with. Oh, well. But no, Steve Cantaloupe's King can't tolerate it because it's one thing to have executive orders signed off by a good God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding white Texan president, male. And Kenyan Muslim usurpers, man, they'll destroy your government in a hurry.
It's been, 210 years since Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr fought a duel over honor. Life and death over honor. Honor meant that much to our founding fathers, and they did not imagine that a president would dishonor his own oath in the fashion that he has done.
Oh, now, just hold on a damn minute. Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton did duel on the plains of Weehawken in New Jersey. They were both residents of a little village there at the confluence of the Hudson and the East River called New York City, previously called by the previous occupants New Amsterdam until the Dutch got run out. That having been said, however, neither Steve King, nor you, nor I, nor any historian, because this is one of the great mysteries of American history, know exactly what it was that Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton dueled over. But nonetheless, Steve Cantaloupe's King can say that it was over honor, when in fact Steve Cantaloupe's King would not know honor if it knocked on its door and brought him chocolates and flowers. Apparently, the insult, and they didn't duel together. It's not like Alexander Hamilton said, "Aaron Burr, you're a booger eater," and Aaron Burr responded by saying, "Well, Alexander Hamilton, you pick your teeth with your toenail clippings." In which the honor of both men was thereby mutually impugned. No matter how eloquent he was in the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton was an ass. That may be because of the conditions of his birth. It has been said and written that he was that he was sensitive about his parentage. He had been born in the Caribbean, brought to the colonies, etc., etc. But he had risen through brains and ruthless avarice. He had been one of Washington's advisors during the Revolution and was, in fact, Washington's Secretary of the Treasury, and that's why his portrait's on the $10 bill. He was the first Secretary of the Treasury. Of course, being Secretary of the Treasury back then, well, let's say it was very nearly not even a part-time job. There wasn't much treasure to E. Anything in the Treasury today? No, sir. All right. I'll be on the veranda. But that's not the way it went down. Alexander Hamilton said something so scurrilous, so absolutely sleazy and slimy and filthy about Aaron Burr that Aaron Burr felt he had no choice but to engage in dueling. Little legal history moment here. The young United States had begun taking measures toward curtailing the practice of dueling, which had come over from oldie Europe and had a nasty habit of getting otherwise useful citizens real dead real fast. it hung on most tenaciously in the slave states, where people who owned and beat and killed and raped other human beings of darker skin somehow felt like their honor was constantly at stake. "You, sir, are a poltroon. I will see you on the field of honor at sunrise, sir. Have your second have luncheon with my second." But in places like New York, they had begun to take steps, and in fact, the New York legislature had outlawed dueling. So when Aaron Burr called out Alexander Hamilton, all Hamilton had to do was apologize. But he wouldn't, because Hamilton was, in fact, an ass. And so in the early pre-dawn hours, and I think I mentioned this when I came back from my little adventure in New York City, my good friend and Mike's good friend Tara drove me around and showed me a little bit of New York after I was done with my MSNBC appearance, and we went up Riverside Drive? Up the Hudson, and there across the way, under glaring warehouse lights, were the plains of Weehawken. It's apparently a warehouse district now. But in the early pre-dawn hours of that morning, in rowboats, Hamilton and Burr and their seconds, and I think a surgeon and some rowers, set out to row across the East River to the plains of Weehawken because dueling was not yet outlawed in New Jersey. So instead of dueling over honor, as Steve Cantaloupe's King puts it, they were, in fact, engaging in a criminal conspiracy. Really. Because Hamilton, his second, Burr, and his second had all agreed to violate the law in New York and carry out their conspiracy in New Jersey where it wouldn't be a violation of law. Oh, little clarification coming in from News Ninja Carol Baker. "I speak Steve King," Carol says. "Honor is not what you think it is. On her is where women should expect to find a man after he delivers flowers and chocolate. She was asking for it. That's history, my friend." And who am I to argue? Yeah. So, no, this was an act of stupidity. And only a member of the right wing, only a worshiper at the shrine of the National Rifle Association would think that two guys pointing guns at each other and trying to kill each other was an honorable act. It was criminal. It was homicidal. And it was, above all, stupid. You had two men here who were valuable to the nation and somehow couldn't resist the urge to try to kill each other. Again, we do not know what Alexander Hamilton said about Aaron Burr, but it was so nasty that Aaron Burr felt compelled to seek redress. In modern civil society, he might have sued for slander. But it was awful. It was not honorable. Gore Vidal, in his magnificent novel Burr, which is a fictionalized account of Burr's life, Gore Vidal argues that what Alexander Hamilton did was to suggest that Burr was having sex with his daughter Theodosia. Burr had only one child, a daughter, Theodosia, and he educated her as he would have a son at the time, which was deemed to be just wrong. letting the women's get all knowy and stuff within his lifetime. She would marry a gentleman planter from South Carolina, Stan, and would be drowned at sea going thither. It was known, for instance, that Hamilton had referred to Burr as a Cataline. And since this is, in fact, one of, if not the most intelligent radio audience out there, period, end of sentence, I don't have to explain what a Cataline is, except to say that, you know, among the classically educated of the day, it was a polite way of suggesting that someone was a traitor with a treasonous heart. I've often speculated that, given the similarities in the words, that maybe it wasn't a Cataline that he called him, but a Catamite, which would have called Burr's manhood into question, and you wind up with a similar setting. But to somehow say that the President of the United States is lacking in sufficient honor to form a criminal conspiracy, rowboat across a river, climb up the cliffs of the Hudson up onto the plains at Weehawken, and blow away his political opponents, that's why this is Titanic Tuesday, you know? Yeah. So let's go back and let's catch this, and I'll try not to interrupt again, okay?
And then turn around and assume that authority unto himself, as if his word means nothing. It's been, 210 years since Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr fought a duel over honor. Life and death over honor. Honor meant that much to our founding fathers, and they did not imagine that a president would dishonor his own oath in the fashion that he has done.
Holy mackerel. I have to interrupt just long enough for this. Carol suggesting maybe he called Burr a cantaloupe. And suddenly you see that history comes full circle. It's possible. I was reading an article just today about the intersection of realities that the physicists who think about molecules and stuff by individual names like George and Harry and Beatrice and Wilhelmina say might possibly exist. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe this is one of those places where on that evening in New York City, worlds interlapped and overlapped and interconnected, and the next thing you know, there was Alexander Hamilton calling Aaron Burr a cantaloupe. "Sir, I'm not sure what you have called me, but I think I must needs shoot you for it." Right.
It was just 2 years.
Oh, this is the guy he's talking to. Greg Carambos. Hi, Carambos.
Years ago that three House Republicans lost their plum committee assignments because the leadership determined that they had not been sufficiently supportive of the GOP agenda. Is there any fear among you and others who are not voting for the speaker that there could be some sort of retribution here?
Well, I expect there to be retribution. I anticipate it, but it's not what I call fear. It simply is this, that I fear not doing my duty. And if I took an oath to come here and do my duty as...
he said duty twice.
As the way I've explained it and pledged it to my constituents. And it's not just something that is a campaign promise that could be explained away. It's a conviction. And so you cannot be compelled to violate your convictions.
Oh, if only he had a few more convictions. You know, enough to send him away for a couple of years like Bob McDonald did today in Virginia, Stan. Yeah, because he did. Bob McDonald was facing 10 years or so for dishonoring the office of governor. He, a former attorney general, pled that he didn't understand it by taking oodles of gifts from a vitamin salesman. No, really. Facing 10 years, his lawyers argued that he should be given 6,000 hours of community service, sent home and told to go and sin no more. And the judge split the baby and said, prosecution wants 10 in the slam. Defense wants slap on the wrist. 2 years, club fed. How's that sound? Accepting bribes gets you 2 years. What does having a couple of grams of rock cocaine in one's pocket get someone in this country, and it ain't in club fed? There was a time when the punishment for a public official accepting bribes, we are told, was to be placed in a burlap bag with a wolf and thrown in the River Tiber. Times change. Times change.
And I won't be, and neither will the others that have gone on record, and there will be more going on record, I will guarantee you that. And there will be the attempt at retribution presumes that this is not going to be a successful effort.
True.
This is a growing number. There will be more people vote for a different speaker than there were last time. That number will be greater. I know that. Will that number be greater than 28 or 29? We don't know that yet. But if it is, then we don't have to worry so much about the retribution because we'll have a new speaker, and that's the right result.
Yeah, you got to admit it. It'd be fun. It would be fun. One of the first bills in the Republican House led by Louis Gohmert would probably be to make asparagus the national vegetable. And he the speaker thereof. But it didn't happen. No, it didn't happen. Boehner still has his job. And the sad thing is this much is true out of what Steve Cantaloupe's King said. There will be no retribution. There will be no retribution because, well, John Boehner is not that kind of man. John Boehner is not the kind of man to wield power intelligently. And he also is not the kind of man who can whip a bunch of weirdos, i.e. the teabaggers, into shape. But God, didn't it? Oh, it did, it did. Didn't it just... It filled the right wing with a sort of blissful delirium to contemplate. It's over now. Sure it is. It's over. But mercy. They can dream, can't they? Sure they can. And, of course, their dreams are our nightmares. But dream indeed they did. And it was a beautiful thing to behold. The Beckerhead, for instance, in his shawl-collared sweater, dreaming of a day when the tyrannical boot of that one in our White House would be removed from the neck of freedom. They were dreaming. All right, maybe they were hallucinating, but still, why not? What kind of comedian are you? And yet, somehow being treated seriously as a thinker to make these arguments.
Louis is not going to compromise. Louis is the guy.
And he's got a track record.
We have another chance, America. Mm-hmm. We have another chance. Please don't pass this signpost. Yeah, please. There's another exit. Take it. 202-224-3121. This is massive change. 202-224-3121. You tell your congressman, you vote for Louie Gohmert, I'm done with the Republican Party. Not a dime, not a phone call,
if you
not
don't
a vote. Yeah, if you vote for
Boehner,
you're done. I want you to vote for Louie Gohmert, but
now they're all confused.
Clear. You vote for Boehner, I'm done with you.
Yeah, and this is not the type of thing where you need to convince the equivalent of John McCain in the House, right? You need 29 House Republicans. This is according to the Washington Post. At least 29 House Republicans would have to desert Boehner in order for him to lose another term as Speaker.
Easy.
They look right now and say basically that between 9 and 12 are pretty much guaranteed. 9 have actually already announced they're voting against him. And then there's 3 others that voted against him last time, so you'd assume they'd vote against him again. So you're at 12 already.
3 that voted against him last time?
Well, there's some other in the initial count of 9.
Listen, he's at 12 already.
But you're 12 already. You're basically almost halfway there without really any push. So if you have one of those congressmen that's not good,
the switchboard down.
You just need to get the good guys.
Shut the switchboard down. Tell everybody you know in the freedom movement, everybody you know.
Especially the new guys.
Louie Gohmert, call them now.
Call now. Operators are standing by. This is a free call. The freedom movement. Did you notice it's the freedom movement? Well, no, that's not who's going to get. That wasn't who was going to get. No, the stupid movement is who would get Louie in. The asparagus movement. Not the freedom movement, Glenn. But he's safe. Louie is. He can and John Boehner's safe and well as Ron and Raleigh pointed out, Steve Scalise is safe. Ron, just a little bit before airtime, wrote and said, it appears that Steve Scalise is going to pull a David Bitter and brazen his way through his current problems with the help of people like Newt and Mia Love. Can you say sellout? You will not hear any in-depth reportage on this, save for Democracy Now! Southern Poverty Law Center is called bullshit on Scalise's I didn't know they were racist story. Ron continues, a pipe bomb was set off at the Colorado Springs office of the NAACP today. Yeah, it was. I wonder how Fox will cover this. Things are explosive here in post-racial America. Steve Scalise is going to get away with this because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Now, a presidential candidate just happened to go to a church that just happened to be led by a minister who had pointed out some of the failings of this once great nation and got pilloried for it by the right wing. And lo and behold, when the Steve Scalise story broke, what did they do? Yeah, but Barack Obama, he went and listened to sermons by Jeremiah Wright, and that's the very same thing. Only it wasn't. But Ron's right. He's going to brazen it out. He'll get away with it. And that's because, and some people don't understand why that is. But it's because of the fundamentalist authoritarian nature of the right wing in this country. See, as long as you're a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical, fundamentalist Christian, then all you have to say is, I never said I was perfect. I just said I'm forgiven. And I took it to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He's my personal Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ is. I took it to him, and I said, Dear Jesus, forgive me for going and getting all lollygaggy and smolicky with my Klan buddies. Forgive me, Jesus. And Jesus said, inside his head, mind you, Thou art forgiven. Go and Klan no more. And so I got that going for me, which is good. So if Jesus done forgive me, y'all got to. Ain't no way around it. And Emery and Marveline look at each other and go, well, you know, I mean, we as Christians are supposed to forgive people done like our Lord done did. So I guess, well, you know what? And then Emery looks at Marveline and says, honey, I don't know as we got anything to forgive him for. Because you got to remember, your Klan is just another Christian organization. I seen that the other day on Fox. They said there's just another Christian organization, and you know Fox wouldn't lie to us. Well, Emery, you're right. So while the rest of us are sitting here saying I-O-K-I-Y-A-R and watching Steve Scalise brazen all of this out, the Republicans are asking, well, what's the big deal? I mean, he's a politician. You got to talk to everybody he wants to vote for. I mean, he just went to a meeting and talked to him about his economic policies for American freedom. Dang Democrats getting their panties in a bunch. I mean, look at that. It's just more of them Democrats and their political correctness. That's all it ever is. It's just they want us all to be politically correct and never go to no Klan meetings. Tell me I'm wrong. Meanwhile, if you're a Democrat, you cannot go to the church of your choosing. You have to go to a church of the an approved church of the right wing. So I think we're off to a bit of a merry chase. Our buddy Steve Sentient saying, yes, the Klan put up all those crosses in West Virginia. No, those are coffin daffer crosses. A man toward the end of his life who had a big fortune said that Jesus had spoken to him and told him to put three crosses on a hilltop every 5 miles up and down the interstates. And this he went about spending his fortune doing. And then he had another vision that told him that Jesus had showed him the secret location of oil reserves under the ground in Israel and to go and drill for oil in Israel. And that's when they caught up with him with the Aricep blowgun. Titanic Tuesday will keep you busy. And let's toddle over to Fox for a minute, if you don't mind. Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. They're real upset over there about how so many, you know, them liberals are complaining about wealth inequality in the new United States. Especially a Fox News TV Radio Rwanda host who is a Fox non-blonde by the name of Kennedy Montgomery. Oh, never mind the explanation. Let's just go to the audio. Hockey puck!
All right, very good. A live look at the Dow as we turn to a controversial new rule expected to take effect.
That's Kennedy Montgomery doing the screaming.
later this year. It would force publicly traded companies to disclose how many times more their CEOs earn compared to their basic employees. It's just one of the regulations in the Dodd-Frank law that's expected to be finalized this year. Labor unions and liberal advocacy groups backing the provision. They say it will shame companies into lowering CEO pay, but critics say the regulation would just force companies to compile complex data to determine the median salary of all their employees, which could cost them millions.
Millions, I tell you, millions, because they've never, the accounting department at Amalgamated Widget has never before calculated the salary of their CEO. I mean, just every 2 weeks they deliver a big bag of money up to the CEO's office and say, take as much as you want, boss, and we'll give the rest to the proles. Right. And just, I realize that talking about video on the radio is dancing about architecture, but Kennedy Montgomery's kind of fun to watch. And I don't say that from a sexist standpoint or an appearance standpoint. I say it because apparently somebody was having a lot of fun with Kennedy Montgomery because she wiggles back and forth, kind of the way that Elmo's head bobs back and forth on his neck, trying to keep. Apparently they were wiggling the teleprompter. Maybe the cameraman or whoever was being slain in the spirit and flopping around like a fish out of water or something. Yeah, she's bobbing around like a muppet, just trying to keep up with the teleprompter. It was kind of cute.
It's already cost them millions of dollars. You know, a lot of companies are trying to comply with this in advance. They're essentially trying to slut-shame companies into paying their highest workers less money.
Don't call her that. Apparently, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is now going after the aging male septuagenarian demographic that isn't completely bamboozled by blondes, and they're moving some dark-haired women into the rotation. The skirts are still plenty short, but you know, if it's Cletus and Emery and Clyde and Arley, you know, they don't always agree on everything. I mean, they all agree you got to watch Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, but some of them like your Bud Light and some of them like your Coors Light. And well, they quit drinking Bud once it become owned by, you know, them, Belgian, Europe, you know, old Europe. And then there's Coors Light, and then there's your Miller Light. But wait, ain't none of them owned by Merca anymore. So there's an argument there, and there are arguments over. And now, you know, Clyde and Arley were perfectly happy with the Fox Blondes. But Emery, well, not... So there, you know, it's all just demographics, but you got that. Asking the federal government, which has the power to pass these kind of laws and did, and the president, who has the power to sign these laws into being and did, it's just oppression. It's more Kenyan muslin you slurping, boot putting on the necks of poor little billionaire CEOs. I think we may have inflamed News Ninja Carol Baker a little bit. Slut shamed white men? Is that an admission those men were whore themselves out for money? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it is. No, it's actually calling that slut shaming is actually a different kind of slut shaming. It is to say that. Slut shaming itself, which is a phrase that was invented by or developed by women who were being treated shabbily in the first place, isn't really real? Right. Jack in Shreveport with a note. One of the things the far right wing and Fox does is that it's a pet peeve of mine, is that they use the word force when all that is happening is that the government is making law, hopefully for a positive reason. Bastards. Precisely. Because you use force, and the next thing you know, Emery and Eileen and Clyde and Arley and Marveline and all of them are sitting, it's just like they got a gun to their heads. Right? Yeah. But Andrea Tanteros, rising super genius at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, is going to chime in. And remember, this is a woman who has used her towering intellect to declare that Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice just like the Black Panthers.
Shame companies into paying their highest workers less money.
And slut-shaming companies is not the job of the U.S. government at all. And that info already exists out there, by the way, Kennedy. They could pull up a lot of these reports, and there's plenty of people who work in the federal government who are sitting around picking their nose today at their computer who could do this on their own. That's not a good use of taxpayer dollars. Also, Kennedy, the only people that should care about this are the shareholders, how much people make at the company. Otherwise, frankly, it's none of the government's business. But if they do want to do this, I think it would be helpful to tell us the difference between benefits that you get when you work for the government and a private company, or how easy it is to get fired at a private company versus how hard it is to get fired at a government.
I mean, that would be a much more useful index.
Yeah.
And by the way, it doesn't require government imposition of these types of regulations, which essentially just kill business. California...
Kill business. They do. They kill business. They just bring the little businesses in and lay them back over the chalk mule and carve out their beating hearts and put it in the bowl and feed it to the big government god. Indeed, Carol Baker, indeed. Thus, my pronunciation of her name, Carol says, Andrea Twonteros. Why do I think I need to hear a bullwhip cracking in it? Twonteros!
Is considering legislation that would require companies to have the same sort of public manifesto. It's just another handwritten invitation for corporations to leave that state.
What if we as consumers, what if we like to make informed, moral, ethical choices with our wallets, our money? What if, say, Amalgamated Widget is selling a widget that is exactly identical to an Acme widget, only Acme Widget pays their workers more relative to what they pay their CEO, so that more people are having more purchasing power down on the working class end of the spectrum than they are over at Amalgamated Widget, which pays its CEO a lot more. I mean, these are free marketeers, right? Avant! And in the free market, aren't we supposed to be able to make informed decisions about our purchases? Is it possible? Is it within the realm of reason that we might say, hey, that car company has a better ratio of pay between their CEO and their high executive structure and their working class than that car company? I'm going to buy a car from them. Then again, when you consider your purchasing options out there in the free market, Ayn Randian, anarcho-capitalist wonderland, well, this law doesn't have any effect on in terms of having of finding out what CEOs in China are paid relative to the slave laborers who are chained to a table 12 hours a day. I wonder what the CEO of Foxconn, who builds phones for Android and Apple devices, makes motherboards and stuff like that. I wonder what the CEO of Foxconn makes as compared to some poor Chinese near slave who stands on her feet for 12 hours a day. And is so exhausted, if she gets a 15-minute break, she just slumps over and sleeps for 15 minutes at her workstation. Who is forbidden to speak to the person next to her, and if she tries, finds out that the person next to her doesn't even speak her dialect because people are deliberately linguistically mixed up so that they can't do anything uppity like organizing for better wages. Why, yes, Carol Baker. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what I mean. She writes, you mean like Sam Walton's kids owning 48% of all the material wealth in this country while their workers live on welfare? Oh, yes. I could tell you. I could tell you a Walmart worker story, but, well, I'm not at liberty. And you would scream. Well, let's go back and let them finish being idiots.
I think it's so interesting about it is they're not saying your CEO has to present the dollars that they're making. They're doing this. You have to present a ratio.
A ratio, yeah.
And they give the example of, you know, somebody who's making $45,000 versus over $12 million. It would be a 1 to 268 ratio. That foments people being very angry, and that's something that people can tap into. They can harness it and leverage it for their own use.
Or maybe it's just easier to comprehend. 1 to 268 versus 1 to 112. And if, in fact, they were requiring actual publication of numbers, wouldn't Fox News TV Radio Rwanda be having a hissy? Well, that's proprietary business information, and they do, they're able to do their capitalist miracle work by virtue of secret pay structures that, oh, Jesus.
Did you want to say something?
As being the CEO of a corporation and many other corporations, I'm the guy that stays awake. I'm the guy that was up at 2:30 last night worrying about receivables. I'm the guy who's personally guaranteeing things. I'm the guy that's out there. So I should have no way.
You know, this is not the guy to be putting up as the poster child for the hardworking CEO. No. Buddy, you think any of the people you pay minimum wage to ever lay awake nights worrying? You think they ever cry? You think they ever look at each other, moms and dads, and make some sort of horrible choice between being able to purchase medicine and being able to purchase food, you miserable prick? Because I didn't hear you say that you were worrying about that. You were worrying about receivables. You were worrying about how much money was going to come into you, Buster. I'd say, if you wanted a reverse ratio, I'd say the sleep-lost ratio among working class versus CEOs is probably significantly higher. You know, like 122,000 to 1. Among working class versus CEOs. Because unless the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda makeup department is really good with the, spray-on concealer, then I'm not seeing that this guy, whomever he is, and I don't know, he doesn't look like he lost any sleep last night.
Have to tell people how much money I'm making. I'm keeping that company going. If it's a public company, they're being wiped out by regulatory stuff. Private companies, but it's nobody's business. If you can find me a good CEO that's going to bring my market cap, I'll pay him anything, okay? And Jack Welch had a great idea. Take the 10% on the bottom, fire them so everyone works harder. And a CEO...
What the... You sure that was Jack Welch and not some Ebenezer Scrooge type from a goddamn Dickens novel? I'm sorry, that sounds like it's straight out of Charles Dickens. Are there no more poor houses? Yeah.
Very hard to find, and when you get a good CEO, he's worth every dollar.
And when you're spending,
notice he's always a he. I'm careful with my language, or I try to be. I try to mix my pronouns up. I like to include the other half of the population. What about a CEO? A she CEO. I mean, if there's a woman out there and she's going to increase my bottom line and increase my profits, I'll pay you anything. How hard would that be? It's apparently goddamn near impossible over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and he's sitting on a couch with four women. Of course, they won't be getting all uppity. Just don't think so. Oh, finish, for God's sakes.
Time, Bo, crunching all these numbers
right
for the government.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you're spending all this time crunching numbers for the government,
right,
that's less time you spend focusing
absolutely.
On your business.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because the CEO is the one that's going to do all the number crunching, don't you understand? I mean, they're not going to, yeah, because them 10% at the bottom of the company, that's probably the ones that they fired who would have been calculating what the CEO ratio is. Jack in Shreveport with a note, subject line, CEO sleep. These CEO freaks don't worry about anything. Even if they screw up and the company loses enough money so he or she gets fired, he or she still gets a golden parachute. And these people fire desperate workers without a second thought. They don't have a damn thing to worry about. And see, that's generally going to be the experience of most American workers, what Jack has said there. Meanwhile, Tim from L.A., government needs to tell the public what they get paid? They do? One, Ronald O. Nichols. $343,678 regular pay. Total pay, $349,137. A list there, 1 to 10. Imagine we find out what private corporations make since we subsidize them with tax breaks. We know that the Koch brothers are billionaires, as are the Waltons, but how much do they get paid?
Well, you see, it's all in paper. It's all in paper, Tim. I mean, they're not actually getting any money.
Can you imagine? No. If you walk into a McDonald's with a Koch brother or a Walton, you're going to wind up buying their goddamn lunch because they don't carry any cash.
I think it's so de classe to carry money around. I mean, it's filthy stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's
so
not
the
free.
Government should stay the heck out of corporations
and,
as it is with the public corporations. They put their
with
ugly
everything
nose
else.
In there.
Yeah. Jedediah, I will say this.
Apparently that's Jedediah. And what's curious, and this is a video moment, he says they put their ugly nose in there and points to his two eyes. That one's for Jedediah. They put their ugly nose in there.
Very quickly, and I want you to speak to this girl. Wouldn't you say that it is the Fed's monetary policy which is creating this false bubble on Wall Street, which is enriching CEOs? Mm. And if we would have less regulation, we would have naturally more wealth in this country?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't see an edit in there, but I think they must have gone to commercial and gotten drunk. There's a false bubble on Wall Street created by government regulation, but it wouldn't be a bubble if we just end the regulations. And I don't know. They may have blown right past the fruit jar and gone right to the meth. I can't stand anymore. We're going to take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We are still where we started the program, $135. Thank you, James. $135 away from the evening's fundraising goal. And hey, the new year has begun. It is the 6th day of January, 2015. That means the Green News Report is back. Yay, Brad and Desi. So, listen, you know how to reach the program, right? Email Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, BobKincaid @gmail.com. Twitter @BobKincaid. Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Facebook group, The Horn, Head On Radio Network. Okay. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you want to reach Skype to Skype and you've never done it before, just send me a contact request and we'll be right there. Phones, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, HORN. Or you can stand outside and yell. Might hear you. Might not. A little musical interlude and then the Green News Report, and we'll be right back at it. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I hit a job. I hit a girl. Had something going. It's Tuesday, January 6, 2015.
While we were out.
2014 will go down as the warmest year around the globe in recorded history.
Yep, that happened. Plus, the EPA issued new coal rules. Vermont shut down a nuclear plant. Germany breaks more renewable energy records. Republicans take over. And the planet loses another champion.
You're going to get all that into 6 minutes?
If you don't talk too much.
All of that, maybe, and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Going on, you know, almost 2 decades of no global warming, on every metric from polar bears on down, the global warming narrative has weakened.
Oh, Fox News, even in 2015, the more the climate changes, the more you stay the same. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we've been off for a few weeks over the holidays. A lot to catch up with. Good luck with that. And as the year begins, oil prices continue to plummet.
Yep.
The stock market is freaking out about it. Drivers love it, but the question of whether this is a good or bad thing for the planet, that's another issue. Cheaper gas prices means more people are buying more gas to travel more distances. They're less likely to buy electric and hybrid cars, more likely to drive big SUVs. It might be nice in the short term for the economy, but it seems like it's bad news for the planet.
Yep. And another thing that's not so great news for the planet, Republicans this week took control of both houses of Congress, and their first move is a bill to force approval of the controversial Keystone XL pipeline from Canada. As we go to air, White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest flat out said President Obama will veto it.
I can confirm for you that if this bill passes this Congress, the president wouldn't sign it either.
He's not going to veto it because he's against the Keystone XL pipeline. Josh Earnest says he will veto it because it's already going through an approved process through the courts, through environmental review, and so forth.
Right.
So it's still an open question whether the president will approve the Keystone XL pipeline in 2015.
Meanwhile, a lot happened in the environment and energy while we were out. First, it's official. 2014 was the hottest year on record globally. That's according to preliminary data released by the Japan Meteorological Agency. NASA and NOAA will present their data in coming days, but the climate change denial media immediately downplayed the record, saying, hey, it's snowing in Japan.
So how could there be global warming?
Right. Anchorage, Alaska set a new record, too. For the first time in recorded history, for a full calendar year, temperatures in Anchorage never once dropped below zero.
Wow.
In China, the Chinese government announced it will close 2,000 coal mines within the next year and enacted new environmental laws that will curb industrial pollution with criminal charges.
2,000 coal mines they're going to close in a single year?
That's what they said.
Amazing.
In the U.S., the Environmental Protection Agency issued the first ever federal rules for the storage of coal ash, the millions of gallons of toxic waste left over from burning coal for electricity.
That's the toxic stuff that gets stored up in ponds where the dams break and all of that poisonous water.
Well, groups say those new rules are woefully inadequate to protect public health and drinking water supplies.
Oh, you environmentalists.
Vermont's only nuclear power plant has been shut down for good.
Very good news.
The citizens and the state legislature. The legislature voted years ago to close it, but it was economics that finished it off, with the glut of cheap natural gas in the U.S. making all nuclear plants pretty much too expensive to run all across the country.
And so what do we end up closing, about 4 or 5 nuke plants in the U.S. over the past year?
Just so far. In Germany, wind energy in December produced more power than all of Germany's 8 nuclear plants put together. Remember Solyndra, the solar manufacturer that went bankrupt after receiving a loan from the Department of Energy?
I do. It was a boondoggle. It cost the U.S. billions and billions of dollars.
Except it wasn't. Contrary to the right-wing media narrative, the Department of Energy's program is actually a rating success, returning $5 billion in profit to the American taxpayers so far.
It's almost like it's the opposite of what they told me on Fox News.
On the danger of climate change and the need to act. Predictably, the folks at Fox News are freaking out.
And to now have a pope jump on that bandwagon would sow confusion, I think, among Catholics.
Yes, the Catholics will be so confused. They'll be walking into confessional walls.
That's just a smattering of what went on while we were out. You can catch up on at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
And finally, while we were out, former New York Governor Mario Cuomo, father of current New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, passed away at the age of 82. He was one of the first politicians to sound the alarm on climate change and call for action, all the way back in 1992 when he spoke at the Democratic National Convention. We'll give him the last word today. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We must deal with what could be, eventually, the most lethal problem of all, a degraded environment. One that threatens to convert the entire planet into a cosmic hothouse.
I'm in a New York state of mind.
Ah, it's nice to have Brad and Desi back. 19 minutes, almost to the halfway point of this evening's Titanic Tuesday broadcast. Oh, I didn't mean to click that. Oh, well. Thanks very kindly to Karen. Karen jumped out there this evening and helped out with James. We are now only $115 away from this evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly, Karen. It is much, much appreciated. Ron in Raleigh with an observation. He says, every study I've read concerning CEO pay seems to indicate that the pay of CEOs bear no relationship to company performance. Remember when Carly Fiorina ran HP into the ground? The CEOs seemed to just fail upwards. Indeed. And I think that's probably the big secret behind CEO-ness. It doesn't take a great deal of talent. It just takes a great deal of determination to make money. It's kind of a corollary to what the great John Barrymore said about acting. I said, you play those death scenes so well, isn't that difficult? He said, dying's easy, comedy's hard. You know, songwriting, musicianship, difficult. Painter, difficult. Poet, difficult. Writer, difficult. Sculptor, difficult. Academic researcher, difficult. Teacher, difficult. Hell, shortstop, difficult. Wide receiver, difficult. Power forward, difficult. CEO, really? Donald, is there anybody out here who thinks Donald Trump has a difficult job? Yeah, me neither. Let's run over to the bill.
Man, good evening.
How are you?
Somebody new from over the sea, you know, Barnacle Bill would say where he is. I'm okay for a change. But where did Fox find this executive?
I don't even know where. Apparently his name is Jedediah. I don't know. Maybe somebody can look it up and find out who this guy is who thinks that his nose is his eyeballs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this guy sounded about much like an executive as I do, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think if we want to get right down to it, the CEO class is basically the same thing as the antebellum planter class.
Yeah.
Does that work for you?
Yeah. Yeah, it sure does. Oh, I mean the people who didn't care what they did to make money.
Yeah.
And who suffered while they made money, and, yeah. I know I had my aide was sitting in here listening. I was listening to Dr. Bill today, and the woman who comes in here and makes sure I'm still breathing, she was astounded. She had never heard this kind of stuff before in her life. Because she's a public school graduate, which means, not a hell of a lot is what it means. I didn't really start to learn until I started reading all kind of different things. And I just don't know how much future there is. You got young kids, and... Well, Ford, of course, has been well-trained for radio, but I don't know what radio pays anymore compared to what it used to pay.
Well, it used to... I mean, the captains of industry have always been paid higher than their workers, but the ratio... And in fact, in the modern world, the ratio is much lower in, say, Germany or France or other civilized countries. In the United States, the sky's the limit, and I guess that's supposed to be the American dream. But you have to. But isn't Bill? Isn't part of the American dream the idea that you can work your way up? Because if that was part of the American dream, that's over.
Yeah, I just heard a radio dramatization about the guy that wrote all those books. You know, where you start at the bottom and work your way up. There was a whole series of those books at one time that was supposed to be a motivational factor for young people long before my time. I can't even think of the name of it now. The name of the guy
who Horatio Alger?
Horatio Alger, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if that's good. The English language just, in the American situation, people start hanging names on their kids because of somebody, American does something good, and the next thing you know, they're carrying the names of. One Confederate general and one World War II general. Where did the name Simon Bolivar Buckner come from?
Wasn't Simon
Bolivar?
You mean Simone Bolivar? Bolivar was well thought of once upon a time in this country, and this country has had a habit of respecting people periodically who weren't Americans. I mean, for instance, out in Iowa stand, hi Barbie, there's an El Cobber, Iowa. And
ooh.
El Cobber.
Jesus.
Or maybe it's just Cobber, Iowa. And I think at one point in time, maybe their high school mascot was the Fighting Sheiks. A man named Abdel Cobber led long before the 20th century Algerian revolt against the French in more like Napoleonic times. Actually, it was around the mid 19th century, really. It was post Napoleonic. But Abdel Kader was a sheikh who, and I think he was a Sufi mystic, maybe, who led an absolutely bedeviling insurgency against the French occupiers. And because he was fighting for the freedom of his people, the people who were then settling what was Iowa decided to honor him by naming their town after him, Bill. If you can imagine.
Yeah, I never knew that. I never heard that before. I thought
I would check with your books on tape, folks, and see if you can find any material on Abdelkader, because he is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a really good book by that Fletcher Pratt, who I hope is not related to the later models. And he talked about Krakatoa. So when I first read the book, I was like 16. I said, what the hell was that? And I had to go look that up. That was a tremendous situation, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Pardon?
I'm agreeing.
Yeah. I never heard of that. And here you are in school, they never mention stuff to you. The fact that the German fleet and the U.S. fleet had a standoff in the Pacific. Because the Germans wanted to get a hold of the Philippines and seat one of their royal people on the throne, you know. And, we went in there to fight for freedom against the Spanish. No, so we could go in and take it over, you know. And, anyway, I won't keep you, but, yeah, that guy, I couldn't believe that guy. It's not only that the tone of his speech was like, what was the guy selling fruits and vegetables in a corner or what?
I don't know. I don't know, you know, I stay up nights worrying about accounts receivable.
Well, when I was a little kid, I was in a neighborhood where there was a lot of Italians, and these guys would have a truck loaded with vegetables, and they'd be singing out the names of whatever they had in Italian. And I began to understand, that's eggplant, you know. Or it's this or it's that, you know. Man, eggplant. You ever work with it?
I've tried, but I've never been successful.
Well, my second wife could do eggplant parmesan. It was,
I love it. I love it. I've just never been any good at making it. I mean, I love eggplant moussaka. Or, I'm sorry, moussaka.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know whether it was pronounced moussaka or moussaka.
It's got that lovely nutmeggy bechamel sauce yummy.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to figure out whether I should call one of the local purveyors of Chinese American food here. I'm kind of on the hungry side today. Maybe I'll do that.
Ooh, a little egg foo young, yeah. Maybe?
You had to say that, didn't you?
I'm sorry.
I don't mind.
I love egg foo young. What do you want? And that lovely gravy? Whoa.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can just feel my...
I think your decision's been made, hasn't it?
Yes. Will you hear your arteries clogging up?
Yeah.
Well, I beat the reaper twice in my life, so I was 51 years old. Had a small heart attack, and then last year, you know.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know how much more time I've got. Every time the Republicans do something, it's like, put your hand up. What did Red Fox used to say? I'm coming, Elizabeth.
This is a big one. I'm coming, Elizabeth. Yeah. This is a big one, Elizabeth.
Yeah, he was a funny man. He did some recordings that were outright, I mean, it was really a kind of a low thing, but it still was funny as hell. He did a thing called a horse race. You ever hear that?
No.
You never heard Fox?
Oh, I've heard Red Fox. Fox. I don't remember the horse race. No.
Well, that was a a monologue that he did on recording. And I was lucky. There were so many comics working on record. Shelley Berman, George Carlin, Rodney. But I said the best, one of the best times in my life was a Kenny Youngman doing a Latin concert performance for the Hadassah, raise money for Hadassah. And that, this guy could fire those one-liners so fast you couldn't duck. He was just, I just got back from a pleasure trip. I drove my mother-in-law to the airport. That's the one that jumps out at me. That was, and all those guys from the Catskills. Oh, God. Funny. Anyhow, I am glad to hear Kevin's back. I'll give him a call a little later, I hope, and see what he's up to. But anyway, you take care of yourself and keep it going, Bob.
I'm going to try, Bill. You have yourself a good evening, and report back on the Chinese carryout, please.
Oh, yeah, that's good stuff.
I don't have... How do I explain this? I don't have any good Chinese anywhere near me. We got a couple of places, and they sprung up in the late 90s, and they were just uniformly awful. These giant buffets of just crummy Chinese food. And it was just awful. And they're all over the place, and with that we have, but every time I walk in there, I walk out saying never again, and I'm really committed to never again right now. But when we would go to D.C., over on South Capitol Street, down closer to walking distance to the baseball park, there was a little Chinese carry-out restaurant. There was nowhere to sit down. And, you know, you didn't go. And so I remember standing in there with Ferg one night, and there a cop walks in. And you're and it's kind of like what they used to say about, you know, when you're out on the highway, eat where there's a lot of trucks at the truck stops because it means it's good food.
Yeah.
I don't know if that necessarily was true, but, you know, if the beat cop is eating there, you know it's probably pretty good. Well, it turns out this guy was no beat cop. He had just driven 30 miles from Maryland for the shrimp egg foo young.
Oh, my God.
And
you're that close to Maryland?
Well, I mean, D.C., you know, we were in D.C.
Oh, you went to D.C., yeah.
Yeah, and he'd driven 30 miles from Maryland because he did that once a week because he said it was the best Chinese food to be had anywhere in the district. So we followed his lead and ordered the shrimp egg foo young, and oh, my God, it was wonderful.
Well, you know, like the kid in the Christmas Story and his family, one Thanksgiving my grandfather had made reservations and the place had closed. So we ended up going in a cab. Here's my grandfather, a lifetime machinist. He fixed cars, but he never drove one. I don't know what that was about. But we ended up eating Thanksgiving dinner in a Chinese restaurant. They ate Christmas, but I get Thanksgiving. But that was the introduction to a place that... and there was another place that was open till 5 in the morning. You know, you get off a job at 2 o'clock. 1 o'clock playing a gig, and you headed right for that damn place. And it was so crowded. Because by that time, you're really hungry, especially if you find those nameless cigarettes. You're really hungry.
That's an appetite enhancer. Right.
Yes, sir. Anyhow, you have a good night, and I hope you get more intellectual calls than me. You know, I'm not on anything about much history of anything tonight except good Chinese food. And I couldn't get over that guy's delivery. That's an executive. man, what college did he go to?
I know.
Sure didn't. Yeah, he wasn't highly educated.
Yeah, that was your Harvard School of Business day.
Yeah.
You know, well, with an MBA, you know, more bigger asshole.
Well, we used to say that a BA, no, a BS, we know what that is.
Right.
And the MS was more of the same, and the old PhD was piled higher and deeper. And I will see you.
There we go.
I'll talk to you.
See you, Bill.
Take care of yourself.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I think Bill was in a hurry. He was gonna go and call
call for the Chinese carryout. And you got me thinking about it right smart, too. Just can't get any Chinese food, that is. Ugh. But, yeah, I got an egg foo young problem. So it is, and both lines are open, by the way, if you want to jump in and conversate on the program. 304-663-HORN, 663-4676, or 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. It is Titanic Tuesday, and Titanic Tuesday is generally devoted to Panthers. And anyway, my senator, Joe Manchin, is about as much of a Democrat as I am an anarcho-syndicalist. Here's a hint. I am not an anarcho-syndicalist. So I suppose you are aware of the statement that came out from the White House to the effect that if indeed the Congress does decide to get it stupid on, which it will, I mean, consider who we're talking about here, and passes a bill commanding that the Keystone XL pipeline be built, which I find interesting for a party of Republicans who oppose government job-killing regulations. If that's what they believe, then why would they pass a bill telling the free market capitalist economy miracle thingy, God bless America, to go build something? Because, see, the price of oil right now, probably around $50 a barrel or less, price of oil right now is such that it wouldn't make just a hell of a lot of sense to do much of anything with the tar sands, considering how much it costs to produce that filthy explosive goo. Not to mention toxic. But nonetheless, the Repiglicans say that they're gonna, and the Obama White House says that, okay, that's fine, you do that, and President Obama is going to veto it. I hope he sticks to his word. I hope he is good. I hope he stands by or has the courage of his convictions on this. The United States needs the Keystone XL pipeline about as much as we need a, you know, typhus epidemic or influenza epidemic or Ebola epidemic. Because the Keystone XL pipeline is a killer too. And it's a killer that keeps on killing. Epidemics, well, and pandemics, they follow a waveform. They ebb and they flow. They rise and they fall. But the Keystone XL pipeline, it's poison forever. Because once you get a few bajillion thousand barrels of that filthy goo into, say, the Ogallala Aquifer, enjoy drinking it. Because, see, the Trans-Canada folks aren't going to be drinking that. Americans are. Right? Yeah. But anyway, so the Repiglicans are all upset at having been told that they are about to engage in a futile act. But not only are the Repiglicans upset, my senator, Joe Manchocrat, is upset too. In the Washington Post story delineating the fact that Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, says he will veto the Keystone XL pipeline bill, whatever Keystone XL pipeline bill is produced by this denizens of Bedlam Congress. For some reason, and it beats me, honestly, for some reason in writing this story, Katie Zezima, I don't know, of the Washington Post decided to place a call over to the press office of Senator Joe Manchin. Maybe because Senator Joe Manchin keeps trying to position himself as a uniter, not a divider. I can reach across the aisle, says Joe the coal broker. You're not reaching across the aisle, Joe. You're over on the other side of the aisle. You're not folding space. You're not a third-stage guild navigator, for God's sakes, Dune reference. But nonetheless, Katie Zezima asked Joe Manchin for his opinion on Barack Obama's announced
peremptory, preemptive veto. In other words, it's dead on arrival at his desk. And Joe Manchin said the following. It's the most discouraging thing I've ever heard. For the leader of the country to say basically... He's not the leader of the country, Joe, you dumbass. He's the president of the United States. For the leader of the country to say basically, forget it, this is all for naught. It's not what this country is about. It's not what we're all about. And it's not the process that I'm used to working through. No, Joe, you're used to saying, I'm a friend of coal, and if you're not a friend of coal, why not? Now, the Keystone XL pipeline isn't going to pass any damn where near almost level west by coal, Virginia, for it. Because, well, Joe Manchin's never met a hydrocarbon he didn't love. And Joe even says, I believe in climate change. I think it's because there's too many people on the planet. I don't think it's got anything to do with burning coal or nothing, because I'm a friend of coal, and if you're not a friend of coal, why not? You should be. And he went on to say that Barack Obama is mocking the legislative process. To say that he won't give it a chance is absolutely a disservice to our country. God, next thing you know, he's going to be joining up with the Republican Senate rock and roll band, and all we are saying is give fans a chance. Okay, I won't sing anymore tonight, all right? Isn't that interesting? Joe Manchin apparently thinks that Barack Obama is the first president in American history to ever threaten a veto, or to ever even make a veto, do a veto, veto something. When in fact that's not the case. Presidents often have, through the history of this country, have vetoed things, but never a Negro one! Right? But it's that opening line that just really gagged my gut. And if you're on hold, please stay on hold. I'll get to you in a second. One line open, 304-663-4676, the Gizmo line, if you want to jump on. It's the most discouraging thing I've ever heard. Joe Manchin was governor of the state of West Virginia when, one Easter weekend in April, a Massey Energy underground coal mine suffered a massive explosion that incinerated 29 human beings beyond being recognizable as human beings. That's 29 families. Maybe even more like 58 families. That's mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, wives, cousins, uncles, aunts, friends, neighbors, all of whose lives were shattered in that moment of massive profit-driven avarice. Joe Manchin was governor before that, when the Sago mine disaster occurred and claimed 13 lives. And yet, speaking of an unnecessary, won't do a damn thing for anybody in the United States of America, except maybe some coupon clippers and day traders and hedge funders and whatnot, speaking of this godforsaken, toxic nightmare, Keystone XL pipeline, Joe Manchin says, it's the most discouraging thing I've ever heard. You know what, Joe, I'll bet hearing that the president is going to veto the Keystone XL pipeline bill, I'll bet that's not the most discouraging thing 29 families from around the Whitesville, West Virginia area have ever heard. No, that's more like, ma'am, your husband was just going into the mine when it blew up, and, well, we're going to look for his body, ma'am, but we don't think he survived. That's probably the most discouraging thing that she ever heard. Most discouraging thing that maybe a boy ever heard down that way is, well, son, daddy's not coming home because daddy died in the mine. That may be the most discouraging thing he ever heard. Then there's people who aren't even coal miners who are constituents of Joe's who get to go to the doctor and have the doctor say, well, the tests are back, and you've got cancer. Because a person happens to live near a mountaintop removal site. Or maybe it's a mother-to-be. She doesn't smoke. She's taking care of herself. She just happens to live near a mountaintop removal site. And her obstetrician looks at her and says, well, the ultrasound's back. And, well, Mama, your baby's not going to be able to breathe all right. Your baby's got birth defects. With birth defects, Mama. And that's probably the most discouraging thing she's ever heard. But the most discouraging thing that Joe Manchin has ever heard is that Barack Obama is going to use a power that is given to him by the Constitution of the United States to veto an ill-considered, shameless, toxic, stupid, idiotic, won't create any, virtually any jobs at all pipeline. It's the most discouraging thing he's ever heard. Whew. To say that I'm proud of Joe Manchin would be to say something entirely false. I'm ashamed of Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin makes me ashamed of my state. This beaten down, bedraggled, trod upon, abused state. You know, I do believe, reintroducing the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act in fairly short order in this new Congress. It's based on real science. When I mentioned the mama being told about the birth defects, or the person being told that they have brain cancer because of the filth that they breathe in their air, that's based on actual science, because that happens around mountaintop removal communities. But I remind you that Senator Joe Manchin will not even acknowledge the existence of the peer-reviewed science that shows that his beloved mountaintop removal industry is poisoning and killing people from the womb to the rocking chair and all ages in between. Now, I said a minute ago, if you were on hold, please stay that way. Let's, 304-574-8178 is open. Let's go to the gizmo line. Is that you, Jim?
That's me, Bob.
What's happening?
Well, it sounds like I just tuned in 5 minutes ago, but it sounds like, so that's the same old shit.
It's new shit.
Oh, new and improved?
New and...
No, but I mean, it's just like they've been doing this for decades to the coal miners, the coal workers, and... in all workers. It just becomes more and more pervasive today. Yeah. And just like now this seems like this is like full-time worker, they want to just hire you part-time. They're worried about the Obamacare and effect.
Oh, yeah. Well, and one of the things that the right-wingers in Congress are going to take time to address is to make it more difficult for people to have Obamacare. Because right now the law says that if you work 30 hours a week, you're entitled to health care coverage. Well, the Repiglicans have decided that means there's way too many people getting insurance in America, and they want to run the hourly requirement up to 40, which, as you note, employers don't want to pay anyone to work.
Boy, and it's, you know, yeah, it's like 30 hours. Yeah, with 30 hours is cut off now, they're just going to hire you less. You know, oh, you work 24, 28 hours. And they'll even let you work 30 hours or more a week or two, but they got to keep the average down. And believe me, they keep their eye on that like a hawk. You know?
Oh, sure they do. Because workers having health care is apparently, in the minds of these genius CEOs we were talking about earlier, bad for America.
Yeah.
Because, see, the Republicans haven't explained yet how it's good for American workers to not be able to go to the doctor when they're sick.
Well, the way it's good, for the corporation because you die off, and they hire a new guy, a little bit younger, who doesn't know anything about what's going on. And in like when you first get hired, I got a job. You still got that delusional thought in your head that somehow they give a rat's ass about you. Which they don't, you know, and I know they don't.
Right.
And you're a team, and you're really not a team. And I hate the term team member. Jesus Christ.
Do you like being an associate better?
They're both equally repugnant in my way of thinking. But, yeah, associate or... yeah, it's just really weird. But the reason I call it, I'm calling about what I talked to you, I mentioned tonight, on the internet, the Jim Garrison response.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. Jim Garrison response, Kennedy assassination. Okay, Jim Garrison response, what do you call it? Not space.
Email me the link.
All right, I'll just give you Jim Garrison response. Dash. I was drawing a blank on dash. Kennedy assassination dash. YouTube. And then www.youtube.com/watch. Question mark equals capital.
No, I can't, Jim. I can't do that. Just email me. Just email me the link.
Okay.
I mean, I can't sit here and type in a URL. I can't do that.
Okay, I gotcha. I'll send it to you.
All right, sounds good. You mean back when the Fairness Doctrine existed?
Yeah. And it was him for 27 minutes and 5 seconds. And he's my dad, but he was very impressive. The way he just tore him apart.
I look forward to seeing it. What did Hunter Thompson say? The hogs are in the tunnel and they'll travel in a road of bones?
Yeah.
Well, here we are. Welcome to the tunnel.
Do you think America's going to ever wake up to the American people? You seem to have a little bit more optimism on that side than I did.
I don't know. I don't think anything's going to change between now and November of 2022.
That's the first chance we have at I think that's the first real chance we have at taking the House back, or really taking much back in the way of government at all between now and then, because that's the 2020 census will have mandated redistricting.
Yep. No, I'm very aware of that. The word can add some 3 or 4 years older than me, and I'll be in my 60s by then. It seems like those older people tend to always drift toward the Republican Party.
I think generally speaking, it's not always the case. It wasn't the case with my folks, but I think a lot of the time, the older one gets, the more conservative one gets. Because I think, and I'm supposing right now, I've kind of got a foot in both worlds, Jim, because of my age.
I'm listening to
the music that my kids listen to, and I'm going, you know, damn. Please, the Beatles, the Stones, anything. Hell, you know, but there's hope, because they thought the soundtrack to Guardians of the Galaxy was the best music they'd ever heard in their lives. And
right.
it's all just 70s AM radio standards. So, yeah, that's hopeful. But by the same token, I think when you get, unless one is progressively grounded, one tends to get more, one gets driven toward conservatism by virtue of a sort of fear of the world that is changing around you. Does that make any sense, Jim?
Yeah, but now that just the total bombardment, I don't watch much TV, but even there, it's just so corporately grounded into that. You know, that avenue, and then it's everywhere. To say you're a democratic socialist, I mean, but a leftist, that blows their mind. If they even grasp it, I mean, it's just like mentioning the word socialism. They're clueless about how much of socialism's already here, as they're trying to push it out the door.
And by the way, it's not all bad news today. Something really, really exciting happened in, of all places, I think Fresno, California today.
What's that?
They found on the high speed rail project. That will put a high-speed rail line between San Francisco and Los Angeles. It'll cut the trip between L.A. and San Francisco to about 2 hours as opposed to 4 hours driving.
And cut down the fossil fuel being going out in the air.
Hopefully, yes.
Well, that is good. That is good. I mean, but it's just like a bomber. I remember at the beginning of the administration. Offered numerous high-speed rail things, but surprise, surprise, the Republicans didn't let it happen. Yeah, and that's the scary thing about them controlling the House, because everything has to be introduced to the House, right?
What?
Or the legislation.
No, everything, no, the House and the Senate... financial, fiscal, budgetary legislation has to originate in the House.
Well, I mean, they control the purse strings. I mean,
yeah, purse string stuff has to originate in the House.
Well, we'll see what happens. Obama, in some ways, he's been a disappointment, but then when you look at what I call the reality. He's actually done halfway decent, but and not good enough for me, but I don't think we're going to see a FDR or JFK-type president
I don't think we are either, because we are at a state of our imperial evolution where that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, they've already got the psychological profile down to a T, is what I'm thinking.
Well, no, I don't think it's anything to do with the profile, Jim. I think it's where the country is. We are an empire, and we are going to behave as an empire. And the people who control, and by virtue of things like Citizens United and the ongoing erosion of any concept of anything but bought power in this country, wants to buy for us.
Yeah, that's where the workers, the quote unquote workers, they want unionized, which is like 97%. And somehow they think they're going to win the lottery next week, or they're going to get that big raise in this, or that big promotion.
I don't even think they're thinking that, Jim. I think they're just trying to survive. And I mean, I talked to people during the Christmas season around here, and of course that's no representative sample, but I saw people, you know, there. Look, I mean, this is West Virginia, and there's help wanted signs at McDonald's. And there's help wanted signs at Walmart, and there's help wanted signs at Wendy's and Arby's and the convenience store Rippy Marts. There's, you know, there are help wanted signs, but not one of those help wanted signs leads to a job with a living wage that for 40 hours a week that carries health care and is something one may support one's family. And that is really the break point. Now this is not a sexist statement. This isn't about wanting to go back to Leave It to Beaver world or anything. But one of the tenets of the gone of the America that is gone and ain't coming back was the notion that you could have a family in which one person could work, one half of a couple could work, and the other half of the couple could stay home, make sure that the house kept it. Look, my mother was my mother had a permanent civil service rating from the federal government by virtue of having worked for the Postal Service. She could have gone to work when they moved to Alabama and would have had preference in hiring at any post office around town. She did not do it, however, because my father was making enough money on a silicon furnace that they could afford, and it didn't make them rich, but they were able to survive. And they were able not just to survive, but to do things for themselves, like drive back to West Virginia when all my friends were going to the freaking beach on vacation. That's the ongoing joke. Never mind. But they were able to maintain that life. I suspect you lived something like that similar in your childhood. Your mom stayed home, and this is not about saying mom should stay home. This is not that. But it is a tell on where we are in America. Because if you've got, and believe me, I know because we tried it, if you've got one person working and the other one maintaining the home, it is damn near impossible to keep up in this country. You can't make it on one income in this country anymore, unless you're part of the ruling class, for lack of a better phrase.
Well, you can get into different versions of it. There's the Jack D. Vitamin version. There's the basically friend telling a friend and the network, and then everything comes down. And you get a little percentage of what that person sells because you introduce them to the. I'm drawing a total blank on it, but it's basically. Okay, you join us, okay, I get like 1% of what you make, and it goes on double line. It's I guess it's still around.
I don't. I'm not. Maybe somebody can tell me, but I'm not exactly sure what you're describing. Yeah, but I do know that there were.
It's the multi-level pyramid scheme, which is.
Oh, Amway.
Exactly legal.
Amway.
Exactly. Scamway.
Right. Well, I know in the world I grew up in. My father, my mother, and I had three siblings. There were six of us all told, and we lived on one man's working salary. The last time in the United States of America that the single wage earner household was the prevalent economic model in this country was during the Carter administration. Ronald Reagan came in.
1980.
Ronald Reagan came in and absolutely devastated that. So that, it is impossible anymore.
Yeah. And the thing is, it goes into, people don't realize that. They have no sense of history, or a vast majority don't, or a majority, and they just think,
consider that. After, in the world AR, after Reagan, the same family that was getting by on one wage earner's income now had to have two wage earners to make the same income. In essence, I think you can make a fairly compelling argument that working people had their purchasing power cut by half, thereby driving more people into the right-wing conservative, anarcho-Randian capitalist miracle.
Yep. That's exactly, that's the way I see it. Yep.
Well, Jim, you
have great minds think alike.
Jim, you have yourself a good evening. And
you too.
We will talk soon.
All right.
Later now.
Take you later.
Bye. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. And I'm sorry about the buffering, why it's going on. Hey, look, there it was. There it did. Just. And I've got the tech support call in, but so far, bupkis. If you want to get involved in the program, both lines are now open, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-HORN, 4676, or 304-574-818. The heart and soul of conversation radio is the concept of, well, there it is, conversation. Backing up to Joe Manchin, I don't even like the way that sounds. Going back to the issue of Joe Manchin, not a Democrat, he posted on his Facebook page today with the new Congress coming in, "Today, I'd like to officially welcome my dear friend Shelley Moore Capito to the United States Senate. Shelley has been a dedicated public servant of our beautiful state." He's not counting the parts of the state that have been blown away, poisoned, and rendered into toxic moonscapes, I guess, for more than 14 years and has achieved countless accomplishments in her own right, most recently making history as West Virginia's first woman United States Senator. Kind of damning with faint praise there, aren't you, Joe? I mean, depending, either she or Natalie Tennant, who was trying to be Shelley Light, were going to be West Virginia's first woman United States, females United States Senator. But do continue, Joe. And this is the part where you might want the hockey pucks and the anti-emetics, and if the anti-emetics don't work, a handy garbage can or Republican to vomit onto. "Shelley and I both strongly believe that putting West Virginia values before partisanship and politics is the best way to represent the people of the Mountain State." Here's a little hint about Shelley Moore Capito. She has never voted, I don't think, for any Democratic initiative in the House of Representatives. Ever. She didn't vote for the Affordable Care Act. No. Pretty sure she didn't vote. No, I know she didn't vote for the Lilly Ledbetter Act. Mm-mm. No. There has never when Joe Manchin says bipartisanship, he means voting. That means him voting with Republicans. Shelley has never had a bipartisan breath in her life. And together, I have no doubt that we will be able to help break Washington's infamous gridlock by working on common sense legislation as we start tackling some of West Virginia's and America's greatest challenges in the 114th Congress. Maybe he posted that, and thank you to our buddy Kelly for bringing that to my attention. Maybe he posted that before they asked him about the promised Obama veto of the Keystone XL pipeline bill. Because after that, it was the most discouraging thing he had ever heard. More discouraging, as noted, than 13 dead miners at Sago or 29 dead ones at Upper Big Branch. More discouraging, right? 14 minutes past the hour. Ron got it. Yeah, Amway. Jim's feed was breaking up a little bit, and I was having a hard time hearing bits and pieces. Coming in from Greg, a little video. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know how it would translate to air, the audio-wise, but in regard to the state of Iowa, he says, I created a video that makes the observation, Iowa becomes a state in 1846 and names 15 counties after Mexican-American war battlefields and soldiers. The video then asks the question, what if Iowa became a state after October 2001? As I mentioned, talking to Bill, Mr. Stress, Abdel Kader was a thorn in the side of the French around the 1830s. And hence, that's why you wind up with El Kader, Iowa, or Kader City. I can't remember exactly what the name is. So, yes, both lines are open if you want to jump in, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. What else? Well, we are not found wanting this evening, this Titanic Tuesday evening. The only thing that's found wanting so far is more folks to jump in alongside Karen and James. We are at $115 to go in this evening's fundraising. It would be nice not to wind up with a deficit at the end of the evening. A reminder for those of you who want who say you have to give me an address to send it to, but we have for anybody contributing $50 or more, we have a horn bumper sticker for you that I'd love to send out. So just let me know. What else? Well, what more do you need? Or maybe it's just time for us to all run and hide. A little something out of the education world. In the New York City area, there are 32 charter schools that educate about 9,000 students, and those students are students of, and the charter schools are run by Success Academy Charter Schools. Yeah. Success Academy Charter Schools is, of course, a for-profit hustle that basically feeds off of taxpayer dollars supporting a public education system. The CEO and founder, see, we were talking about CEOs earlier. The CEO and founder of Success Academy Charter Schools is Eva Moskowitz. And for some reason, I think we probably know what that reason is, Eva Moskowitz was invited to come and talk to the American Enterprise Institute. And we all know that the American Enterprise Institute is, of course, a right-wing, libertarian, booger-eaten think tank. The kind of think tank that produces stuff that, well, you know, things like, those Mexicans will never be as smart as white people because money. Yeah. So she went to the American Enterprise Institute, and she laid out an educational vision for the students whose education she oversees, with whose education she is entrusted. And in the interview with the American Enterprise Institute, she talked about how the key to running great charter schools is figuring out how to cut money and increase profits. Because that, you know, that's the real purpose of anything that happens in America, at least anymore. It didn't used to be. That's before we went absolutely mad with right-wing conservatism and anarcho-kind and what. But the key to running charter schools for 9,000 students in 32 charter schools around New York City is cutting costs. Of course, when you cut costs, you increase profits, and that's very good for Eva Moskowitz. So they had to find solutions. They had to find solutions to, and that means they had to find stuff to cut from the academic curriculum of the Success Academy charter schools, 32 charter schools in New York City. Yeah. Well, Eva Moskowitz thinks that the most important things in school are coding and recess and science. Coding, computer coding, recess, and science. Can't cut out English. We de-emphasize it. Got to give them a little bit of something resembling history because it's still in the damn test. Yeah. What's left? Oh, foreign languages. Here's what she told the American Enterprise Institute.
So something's got to go. We picked, and, you know, this may be shocking to this audience, we picked foreign languages. People say, don't you believe in foreign languages? I love multilingualism. I speak French, but something had to go. We can't do everything. And by the way, Americans don't tend to do foreign languages very well. I think if I were doing schools in Europe, I might feel differently. But my son took 3 years of French, and he could barely say, how are you? Comment ça va?
Comment allez-vous? Oh, well.
I really believe whatever we do, we should do it exceptionally well. And I wasn't sure that I could find foreign language instructors that were really, really good and could do it at a very, very high level.
No, really. Foreign languages gotta go. Well, here's a hint. In Europe, they start teaching foreign languages to children when? Kindergarten, first grade, thereabouts. We start at the earliest, maybe 7th grade, 8th. My first foreign language class was 9th grade, and it was Latin. And I don't think we're much different in many school systems. But what is this? Americans don't tend to do foreign languages very well. Well, maybe that has something to do with American privilege, where we go to Paris and we say, take me to the Eiffel Tower. Okay? And then we yell it louder. And then we do the same thing in Spanish-speaking countries. ¿Dónde está la beer? Cerveza? I don't know about no cerveza. I want a beer. There's a reason the concept of the ugly American is out there. But I also love, I wasn't sure that I could find foreign language instructors that were really, really good and could do it at a very, very high level, because there's something unstated there. I wasn't sure that I could find foreign language instructors that were really, really good and could do it at a very, very high level, and I only pay them crap wages. Because that's what it boils down to. So we're not going to teach. So 9,000 students in 32 charter schools in New York City are not going to be exposed to foreign languages in a city where you're as likely to hear foreign languages or languages other than English or more likely to hear them than just about anywhere else in the United States. Or hear a wider variety of them. Russian. Polish. Even still Yiddish, Spanish, even French, redneck. But 9,000 students in 32 charter schools have just unilaterally had foreign language instruction ripped away from them because Eva Moskowitz thinks Americans don't do foreign languages very well. Jesus. I grieve. For this once great nation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
What's happening?
Good. I had to get away from the program for a few minutes, but I don't know what I missed. But I tuned in again. Excuse me, were you talking about foreign language? And that's very disturbing.
I think it's good for the human brain. Even if the kid doesn't wind up fluent, they will be a better user of the English language for having had a foreign language.
Wait a minute, you ought to be in South Carolina, the English language.
Hey, Todd, do me a favor. I'm having some internet issues. Turn around. I'm gonna make a change here to our internet. That this connection is on, and call me right back, okay? Because we have great conversations, and I don't want to lose any of this. All right, so give me about a minute, and then dial right back. Can you do that for me, please?
Sure, no problem.
All right, stay. I'm gonna disconnect us, and then give me about a minute, and call me right back. I just want to see if this is my bandwidth that's causing the problem. All right, new connection. Let's see if it comes in any better. Carol pointing out, by the way, I learned to speak beautiful Spanish in my Northeast Iowa high school long before I moved to Spain. And it made moving to Spain a heck of a lot easier, didn't it, Carol? I was thrilled a couple of years ago when I wound up in Germany and France, and I got to actually use a little bit of my by then crappy high school French and German. German prepositions will be the bane of my existence. If you put a plug in my neck and just jacked Rosetta Stone German into my brain, I would still have trouble with German prepositions. But it and French and all languages are beautiful in their own way, and they make us a better country. And yet, well, you know, Eva Moskowitz says, we got to have coding class, because every one of those 9,000 students in those 32 charter schools in New York City, they're all going to go and become little app makers for Android and Apple devices, right? Sure. Okay, Todd, let's see if this is any better.
Hey, how's it going? You back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Listen, were you having buffering issues?
Oh, yeah, I'm having buffering issues, too.
I had some dropouts. Anybody who's listening, whenever you go abroad, especially to France, I've been to France once, but I remember the tour guide was like, look, try to speak the language. If you don't try to speak French, you'll get, he didn't say you'll get screwed, but that's what he meant. You know, you won't, they won't be as nice to you. And, you know, that's everything. You know, you have to make adjustments. The world does not revolve around us.
Exactly. And, but remember, I think it was G. Gordon Liddy a few years ago who was complaining about the teaching of Spanish in schools, and he said something like, I don't want my kid learning illegal alien.
Oh, well, you know.
And to be fair, in the high school I went to way, way, way back in the late 70s, I had lots of Latin. I was exposed to French. I never took Spanish, but I did take German. And it was really neat because my first Latin teacher left, and the second Latin teacher came in, and she had actually worked for NASA. And she was not only a Latin proficient, but she was also hyper proficient in Russian.
Yes, I do.
And she had taught them English. And she offered to teach a class in Russian, and a whole bunch of us said, yeah, we're there. Sign right up. Yeah, absolutely. And I was one of them. And then,
wow.
the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian parents said, we don't want Russian offered at this high school. Our children don't need to learn to speak commie.
Yeah, it's like saying, yeah, we don't want you to make $250,000 a year. You ought to be happy making $35,000.
Right.
You know.
Because fluency in a language can fluency in a language can really, really boost your employability.
Absolutely. That's what's interesting. I hate it. I took Latin I think I was a freshman in college, and I hated it. But then as I got older, I was like, wow, I wish really I had paid more attention, because even if you don't understand a word, if you can figure out the prefix or the suffix, you can figure it out, because most of our words are based on Latin words, you know, Germanic words.
Right, right. 70% of the English language is derived from Latin roots, with an overlay of Germanic structures, and the Latin roots come primarily through French. I mean, English is a beautiful hodgepodge language. And it's really handy for its richness of expression. But that's not to say that other languages don't do it either. I know our buddy Horst has been learning proficiency in a Chinese dialect, and I'm envious. I think it's fascinating. But even even if you can learn, and maybe you'll never need it. But one of the things that I've learned is that if you just bother to learn some basic courtesies in different languages, and somebody from there is over here, just to make the attempt here of using their please and thank you, hello and goodbye, can make a world of difference. Can make somebody's day.
Wouldn't the world be a better place?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in pre-med, I was so glad, because like I said, that the Latin is amazing. I mean, even when, you know, when I was in the classroom, I would tell the kids, I was like, you may never take Latin, but if you get the opportunity, do it. Because it's something you really never forget. You know, far away, you know, you just never kind of forget it. Because if you have a really good instructor in any language, at one point when you get to the conversational level, as soon as you walk through the classroom door, they will not speak English. They will just, you know, speak the language that you're learning. And it makes you learn.
Yeah.
It makes you learn. And it's just a good thing. And speaking of languages, I'm a little concerned. And I think I think America has two really big issues right now. And I don't know what your thought is on this, but in my mind right now, the two largest issues we have are the internet neutrality and this Keystone Pipeline. Because those two things, well, the Keystone could change our whole way of life if it messes up if they pass that. And internet neutrality, of course.
Well, let's understand one thing with the Keystone XL Pipeline, Todd. It's not if there's a Keystone XL disaster. It's when there's a Keystone XL disaster.
Exactly.
I'm not saying this because I'm some sort of wild-eyed environmentalist. I'm saying it because TransCanada has a track record of fucking up pipelines.
What is wrong with these people? I'm not going to curse tonight. What is wrong with them? Do they not? And you don't even hear it. I have a buddy in Canada, right? And he's wealthy, and he works for Netroots, okay? So I learned a lot. They already have an alternate plan to go east and go through the St. John's Waterway, okay? We don't need that. We don't have to add it. But why would you gamble with that kind of crap over our main aquifer?
Okay, so here's the answer. Because we've had this answer presented to us from Canadian members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation. Canadians don't want it either. And it's harder to get through in Canada than it is in the United States because the United States, by virtue of right-wing conservative anarcho-capitalism, has been rendered Haiti with cable. And so, there are First Nations peoples who have said no in Canada and are very serious in their no. And plus, there are probably higher labor costs to building it in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, that's where
on the other hand, they've already built this, and let's remember this, they've already built the southern leg of Keystone XL, and it goes up to, I forget the name of the town, I think it's godforsaken Oklahoma.
Probably going toward Cushman.
And so we're talking about the northern leg. Meanwhile, the Rosebud Sioux people have said, listen, if you try to bring that thing across our tribal lands, we are going to consider it an act of war.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. Now, see, this is, I'm concerned about this. I don't hear this enough in the media. The president made a promise to those people that he would not allow that pipeline. Because they have, how many treaties do we have to break with the Native Americans? My God, we tried to kill them. This country has done everything to exterminate those people, and if they didn't exterminate them, they make their lives miserable. All right? Until they're just, it's a terrible existence that most of them have, a lot of them, you know. I will be so disappointed. I'm already disappointed with you-know-who, but, or you know what you call him, president, I'm not sure. But when those people, they gave him a name. That's some big doo doo. When they give you a name, and think about it. Some of those people, the Lakota, the Sioux up in that area, I believe those are the same people where Sacagawea came from. That's who helped Lewis and Clark.
She was Lewis and Clark met Sacagawea. Yeah, but they met her during their stay with the Mandan people, and they wintered with the Mandans, but she was actually from a tribe further on toward what we know as Idaho.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that Yeah, but there's some interaction. I think the Lakota wanted to, like, slaughter them or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the most hostile people that they met were, I think, the Lakota people.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have ended very, very badly.
But she mediated, right?
Apparently Clark managed to negotiate an agreement.
I'm fascinated by that journey, by the way. They have, at the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, they have a lot of artifacts from that journey.
Yeah,
can you imagine going across the country at that time? You didn't know where you were going. That's just crazy. Oh, I don't know what to say about this pipeline thing. I'm telling you, it shouldn't even be a discussion. It should be like, oh no, sorry, this is crazy. If that crap, we've seen what happens when they have a train wreck, accident with it. Cause, you know, they have to heat the pipe even to get it to flow cause it's tar. It's oil, you know, tar, they have to mix it with diesel fuel and solvents to even make it, viscous. You know, to make it flow. And,
I mean, basically the tar sands pipeline's a 1,000-mile long crock pot.
I don't get it. I mean, these jackasses want to talk about, well, it's gold. Yeah, okay. Like 10 jobs, 50 jobs, you know, whatever. No, you can't put a price. Here's the other thing. I don't know. These people are, you know, we have to understand. Some of these people are so greedy to their evil, right? So water is going to be the next commodity, right? Clean water. Look out. Remember, when we were kids, would you ever think that you couldn't even drink the water? Do you ever think you'd spend a dollar or a gallon of water?
When I was a kid, our town had some of the most delightful water imaginable. Because it came out of it was called Cypress Creek, and it came out of Cypress Creek before Cypress Creek met the Tennessee River, and it was just wonderful. Meanwhile, Morgantown, West Virginia, some of the worst. I had a buddy who said Morgantown was the only place where you could get a glass of water very dry. You know, full of dissolved solids and stuff like that, because it was just, I think it was coming straight out of the Monongahela.
Mm. Nice spring water. A lot of kids will never experience.
Yeah, and then there's northern Wisconsin and my friends up there. There are artesian wells up there within sight, practically, of Lake Superior, and I have never had water like that.
You had excellent wild rice and good water.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And anybody who's listening who doesn't eat wild rice, you're missing out. That's all I can say.
Oh, I put it in that Hoppin' John, and the Hoppin' John was twice as good. Now I'll tell you a little secret. I have been told, I have not tried it, but I have been told that making pan, so you've got cooked wild rice. When you make your pancake batter, work some cooked wild rice into it. It's better than nuts. And, you know, butter and maple syrup and go from there.
Really?
Yeah.
So, just cook it like a pancake?
Well, no, you've got your cooked wild rice, and you know how you drop pecans or walnuts or whatever into pancake batter?
Right.
Wild rice. Put wild rice in the pancake batter.
Oh, wow. Now that you know, that's a good breakfast. That'll keep you going all day. That's slow burning carb. Oh, that sounds good. That sounds great. That sounds great. So listen, what do you think? I'm a little upset. I'll be honest with you. I like to listen to, you know, when I wake up really early, I wake up like 5 o'clock, and I listen to C-SPAN, Washington Journal. So I'm shocked at how many people want to see Louis Gohmert as Speaker of the House. And the man, I mean, he might be a nice guy. But
no, he's not. He's an idiot.
Well, that's what I want to say. I'm trying to be nice tonight. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to be a nice
guy. I know, and I hear you struggling, and it is a struggle, Todd. And I just can't, I can't stand to hear a friend suffer. Louis Gohmert's an idiot. Louis Gonjugate Louis Gohmert, okay? Louis Gohmert is an idiot. Louis Gohmert was an idiot. Louis Gohmert will be an idiot. Louis Gohmert will have been an idiot. Louis Gohmert was an idiot. Louis Gohmert had been an idiot. Louis Gohmert idioted, okay? I mean, see, there's that learning Latin for you. I mean, Louis Gohmert is an idiot in the past perfect, the pluperfect, the future perfect. Louis Gohmert can be an idiotic gerund. Louis Gohmert can be a subjunctive idiot, active, passive. I care not.
Hmm.
No, this guy's an idiot.
Oh, he's like a caricature of himself, if that's even possible. I mean, this guy—he has no business in public service.
Well, okay, no. If you want the real nightmare vision, okay, Todd. How did this guy get to Congress? Well, before he was in Congress, he sat on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. He was a judge. He sat there as an idiot. And sent people to prison. He affirmed prison sentences. He affirmed death penalty cases. Okay. Somebody somewhere let this jackass into a law school.
That's what I want to know. I heard that he was a magistrate judge. I didn't know that he was an appellate judge. Wait a minute. How the hell did he get to? What kind of law school did he go to? One of these like right wing Christian places, like Doc Jones or some shit like that.
You're gonna make me do research, aren't you?
Yeah, I every time I see him, I'm like, oh, he's an embarrassment, you know. And he's got the nerve. I remember when Eric Holder got in his face. He was like, look, I'm not Obama. I'll kick your ass, motherfucker. I'll kick your ass. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, don't cast aspersions on my asparagus.
Oh, Jesus.
Right, well, let's find out what draw spunky school of law he went to.
You know, next time I talk to you, I will have an answer. And back to the education, I'm going to tell you something. Like, I caught the tail end of, I forget his name, Jim, maybe?
Oh, well, wait, time out. Sorry, Todd, time out. Just F me to pieces. Of course. It all makes sense. I mean, think about it. Let's get all Sherlock Holmes for a minute. Really, where would Louis Gohmert have gone to law school? Now, he was a brigade brigade commander. He's, you know, just, one notch to the right of a fascisti.
I'm not familiar with law school.
He earned his law degree at the law school operated by the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, fundamentalist Christians at Baylor University.
There we go.
Stop it. He was their law school class president.
Oh, God! Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus Christ.
See, it's a good thing we don't have liquor. Otherwise, this would have been a drinking game.
Oh, my God. And he's such an idiot, he takes himself seriously.
He was a member of the U.S. Army Judge Advocate General Corps at Fort Benning, Georgia, for 4 years.
How many lives has he messed up? I wonder.
Here's how he got. You want to know how he got famous enough to run for Congress in Texas?
You might want to get the hockey puck. You might want to sit down, Todd.
All right, I'm strapped in.
All right, or maybe just take a swig out of the fruit jar, or I don't know. You know, Thorazine dart to the neck. I mean, you're going to need this. Everybody else does, too. Louis Gohmert, future candidate for Speaker of the House of Representatives, came to national attention in 1996 when, as a district judge for Texas's 7th Judicial District serving Smith County, which is Tyler, Texas, he ordered, as a condition of probation, that a man who was convicted of motor vehicle theft, okay, are we clear? The guy was charged with car stealing, and he was convicted for stealing cars, and he was going to admit the guy to probation. Merciful, right? But when it became knowledge to His Honor Louis Gohmert that the defendant before him on a charge of car stealing, which has nothing to do with sex, I might add, when it became apparent to Judge Louis Gohmert that the defendant...
Wait a minute. Why'd you say that?
You didn't get out of the chair, did you? You didn't loosen the straps, did you?
Oh, shit. Okay.
So Louis Gohmert learned that the defendant before him on a charge of car stealing, not car effing, but car stealing, was HIV positive. So at that point in time, Louis Gohmert made a condition of probation that the man obtain written consent from all future sexual partners on a form that the court gave him, which informed them that he was HIV positive.
Oh, my God.
Having done this, he came to the attention of Rick Perry of Head Ranch, Texas. And Rick Perry appointed him to serve as the Chief Justice of the Texas 12th Court of Appeals. That is how Louis Gohmert got famous, by tying an automobile larceny case to HIV positiveness.
So there's our one life that we know of, and there's a million more.
Probably.
Wow, I'm not. You know, that's insane. He is who he is. He's a nut. He is an absolute certified nut.
And he's dangerous. Now, to be fair, to be fair, for somebody who does what I do, Speaker Louis Gohmert would have been gold. I admit it. Most people won't, but I do. I admit it. It would have been magic. Because the impeachment hearings of Barack Hussein Obama would have been opened day after tomorrow.
Hey, I know we got to go in a minute or so. I just wanted, this is on a different note. That's so disturbing, but I'm not surprised. But that means, see, that's what I'm saying. I can imagine how many people that he has slighted and just screwed up their lives on some dumb stuff. He's just a nut. But I heard, was that Jim you were talking to earlier who called in?
Yeah, Jim from Louisiana, Stan.
Yeah, from Louisiana. So, I listen to this late night program called Coast to Coast. I've been listening to that since the '90s, off and on. You know, they have interesting things, and sometimes they're off a cutting edge. You know, I don't always agree with what they say, this and that, whatever. But this Jim Garrison, they had a guest on, and it was Don Barber, and we're the same age roughly, just a couple years older than me. So John Barber, remember did the first reality show. It was called, man, they had, God, just escaped me. They had a young black guy on there. I'm trying to remember the name. But anyway, I didn't know. He produced the show, but he acted like he was just one of the hosts, you know, because it was kind of egalitarian. But he actually produced and was one of the hosts of this show. And I can't remember the name of it. But it was very popular at the time. But he got the interview with Jim Garrison, and it was on NBC, and NBC nixed it because it was about Kennedy, and Jim Garrison was at DA in Louisiana.
Right, and that's his son, Jim, who calls in.
Oh. Well, you know, I've been doing a lot of research and listening to a lot of these people who have archives on KFTK. I don't know, Southern California.
Yeah, KPFK, KFPK, something like that.
Yeah, right. So there's this woman who claimed that she was one of these researchers, in other words, making cancer. You know, it was always rumors, but this is actually true. Trying to kill Castro, they tried to kill Dick Gregory, because they basically, you can put cancer into a virus. If you get somebody's DNA, you can make it specific to that person. Okay? So that's how they can kill these people. That's how they kill Chavez. You know, you get this sudden acting cancer. But anyway, it's her name. Well, I'm not going to go into her name right now. But anyway, yeah, Jim will know. Young Jim will know from Louisiana. He knows what I'm talking about. But yeah, it's Jim Garrison. Jim Garrison case. John Barber did it. He produced it. He's really interesting. It's called Hello America or something like that.
Well, I hope Jim will send me that link.
If not, I can send you the link because the tapes, it's very interesting. I mean, Jim Garrison, I mean, he has no peer. You know, dude was, you know, you couldn't mess with his credentials. I mean, he's dead serious with what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And,
somewhere around here, I have a copy of On the Trail of the Assassins, which is his book.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really interesting, and there's a really good book out called Dr. Mary's Monkeys, and it describes the woman who was Lee Harvey Oswald's lover, and she was like a child prodigy scientist, and they had this clandestine laboratory in New Orleans, and she didn't know what she was getting involved with, and it's a very interesting story. They've played a lot since the anniversary last November. It's pretty interesting. I don't know if you can hear me now. I'm getting quiet.
No, I'm here. I got you.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You can get anybody else on here tonight, but I don't know. I've done everything I can do to get against this Keystone thing. You know, call my people up, call the congressman, you know. I don't know. It's in the president's hands. He has to do the right thing.
Well, I hope he's good as his word. That's all we can hope at this point. Because they're going to pass the stupid thing, and they got 60 co-sponsors in the Senate now, and I think they got 63 votes in favor. At least. But they do not have enough to override a presidential veto. Todd, I got to get out of here, but it's good talking to you, man.
You too, brother.
All right. You take care.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. It is time to get out of here, though. It really, really is. I want to thank James and Karen and Sal. They are the three who have brought you this program this evening. And we are left with $110 to go in fundraising for the night. So tomorrow night's fundraising goal will be $260. And hopefully we can reach it on a prayer meeting. Might, you know, that's when we get our miracles anyway. So thanks, everybody, for joining in, sharing the precious finite time of your lives as we move into this new year, 2015. Thank you very kindly. Thank you, one and all to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.